Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Peter Singer begins his essay, The Biological Basis of Ethics, with a short passage by Henry Sidgwick, representing not just the utilitarian tradition, but a lot of other traditions in philosophy, in making a certain set of claims about duties or moral obligations. And he starts out saying this: "We should all agree each of us is bound to show kindness to his parents and spouse and children, and to other kinsmen in a less degree." And then he goes on from there to describe other people who we have similar obligations towards. But notice what is really front and center here, as Singer is going to point out: parents and children and spouse, the very close, intimate family relationships. And he doesn't say that everybody has a great family or that everybody is going to get along with the people in their family, but he is saying there is a recognized moral obligation based on a sort of closeness that's really quite arbitrary. You could say that spouses choose each other, at least in some cases, although they often don't know precisely who they're choosing until they get to know them a little bit better. But children don't choose their parents, and quite frankly, parents don't really choose their children either, because children turn out very differently than you ever expect. So there's this kind of strangeness to how an arbitrary set of biological relations, granted with all sorts of cultural status involved as well, should be so important in ethics. And Singer thinks that actually this is not that surprising at all. So he begins by talking about, in this section, kin selection in human ethics. And he says, "The passage that I quoted is a description of the principles regulating the duty of benevolence as that duty was generally understood at that time. It gives a graduated list of those to whom we should be kind, which fits neatly," here's where we get to Singer's own perspective, "with sociobiological theories." What are sociobiological theories? They are theories of ethics that say that our biology plays an important role, so that selection operating on a number of different levels, both for the individual and within groups, is important, favors some sorts of behaviors, disfavors others, leading to their replication and reproduction, and so on and so on. And it's sociobiological in that it recognizes that with the human animal, there is an incredible amount of culture involved as well. So he goes on to point out that in some ethics, at least, there will be some where it's not the case, and in human behavior generally, we have this phenomenon that we call kin altruism, which is both the actual behavior of favoring and showing benevolence towards those who we are connected with by kinship ties, however we conceive of those, however we mark and code those in whatever society that we're in. And also, there's a sense of ought, a perceived moral obligation there as well. So it's not purely descriptive, it's also prescriptive as well. And, you know, we could think about what are typical instances of this: looking after children. The idea that, not always, you know, honored by everybody, if you produce children, you ought to take care of them. And you can find this in all sorts of cultures and all sorts of ethical theories. And then also, you know, supporting the family as a whole, however family is understood of, and supporting the members of the family. So Singer talks about how in late Victorian England, there could be duties to parents alongside duties to children and wives, with duties to aid brothers and sisters, and then duties to more distant relatives like cousins or things like that. A great example of this is when somebody strikes it rich and suddenly they have lots of cousins, some of whom may not actually be related to them, showing up, holding out their hand and saying, "Where is my generosity from you?" Why are they doing that? It's not purely based on whatever I can get out of somebody. There's a sense that there is some sort of obligation there, however misplaced it might be. Now, Singer says, some anthropologists and sociologists and other social scientists would say that this is not really biological, this is just cultural. And he says, that's not really that big of a problem. We can have a flexible enough theory to say it's probably got components of both. Every society that we look at has kinship structures. They may arrange them differently, but they still have the same. And even in our late modern society, with conceptions like, say, blended families or, you know, widespread adoption and all sorts of other things that go on, we're still working with the same basic ideas here and the same basic structure of kin selection or kin altruism. Now, what is it to be altruistic? It means to be other-centered, to focus on the good or the needs of the other, and perhaps to make sacrifices of one's own interests in the case that it's required. He goes on and he talks about a few other important aspects of this. One is that we see that people tend to favor kin over other people who, from an ethical perspective, could be viewed as having an equal claim on their resources or their generosity, what we might call needy and deserving others. So he goes on and he says, think of our reaction to news of a famine in Africa. Those who care at all may send a donation to one of the agencies trying to help. $10 or $50, even perhaps $100. Any more would be a rare act of generosity by the standards of society. But those of us fortunate enough to live in Western Europe, North America, Australia, or Japan regularly spend as much or more on holidays, new clothes, or presents for our children. So if we cared, he says, about the lives and welfare of strangers in Africa as we do about our own welfare and that of our children, why would we spend money on these non-essential items for ourselves instead of spending it to save lives? We could be buying mosquito nets or important medicines, or paying for a school or a road, or we could go down the line with a whole series of ores here. Why don't we do that? Well, because we tend to favor those who are related to us or those who we perceive of as related to us. He goes on and he says, I have written and lectured on the subject of overseas aid, arguing our affluence puts us under an obligation to do much more than we're doing to help people in real need. At the popular level, here's where Singer notes there's a tendency here. The most frequent response is that we should look after our own poor first. Among philosophers, sometimes replies are in a more sophisticated manner. I've been told while we should do more to prevent poverty, we should do nothing inconsistent. Here's where we get to the kin altruism, with our obligation to do the best for our children. And as Singer points out, this obligation to do the best for our children involves all sorts of expenses that oftentimes are quite high and rather arbitrary and don't seem to get an awful lot of bang for the buck in terms of human welfare. What's an example of this? Sending them to expensive private schools. A great example of this is you look at our own Congress, our legislators. They could be sending their kids to schools in their districts, especially the ones who, you know, say, maintain a residence in the capital. They don't. Then certainly not to public schools. They tend to favor private schools, right? Why? Because, you know, private schools are typically better off than public schools. They also tend to be very expensive. Or he has another example here that you might find a little bit funny. Buying them 10-speed bicycles. This is probably a little bit dated there. Buying them gaming consoles. Do kids really need gaming consoles or the latest fashion or any of these things? No, not really. But people purchase these things for their kids anyway, instead of devoting those resources even to the poor in their own neighborhoods, let alone the poor elsewhere. Why is that the case? Well, he says that we have a preference for our own, which he says is understandable in terms of our evolutionary history. We see kin altruism in other animals, and not surprising that we also see it in our own. And so he says that family ties are based on what he calls an exclusive and discriminating loyalty, which sets the members of one's family more or less apart from others. This is, again, what kin altruism is and does. He also brings up proposals and even attempts to try to do away with what we can call the institution of the family, the locus of kin altruism. He brings up Plato's Republic, and Plato's argument in the Republic is so long as people are thinking primarily in terms of their own family, they're not going to be a unified society. And the goal is to try to get everybody to have the kind of affection that we would have within a family and the sort of altruism for the members of our society, what he's calling later Singer group altruism. The goal is to do that by eliminating the institution of the family. And it would be based on age class. So you just call everybody who's older than you, who's a male, father, and everybody who's older than you, mother, unless they're old enough to be grandfather and grandmother. Perhaps there's, you know, aunts and uncles or things like that as well, but we don't have to get into the weeds with that. Now, Plato's Republic was never put into practice, at least not successfully. But he also talks about the Israeli kibbutzim. The idea was put into practice there, you would have a collective and there would be children born within it, but then the children are being mothered and fathered, being parented by a wide range of people, and there's an attempt to try to minimize the amount of family time and separate households and things like that. And he noticed, he points out that this didn't really work. It says, for whatever reason, once the kibbutzim became established and the twin dangers of starvation and Arab attack receded, the ideal of unity proved insufficient to maintain the original intensity of communal feeling. They have survived, but they had to come to terms with the family. Couples spend more time in their apartments, often taking their meals there. Children are with their parents for much of their free time and often sleep in the family apartment rather than the children's house. It's no longer frowned upon for couples to sit next to each other on all public occasions. Children once again call their parents mother and father. And he brings up other attempts to do this sort of thing. It's very difficult to eradicate this family feeling. There are, like we pointed out a little bit earlier, some tensions between what's good for the family and what's good for the larger society. So the last thing that Peter Singer considers is this interesting question. Well, why do societies... why do they allow, they tolerate, and going beyond that, actually promote and praise the family when it seems like family loyalty could create people who are going to be very good to their mothers, fathers, children, spouses, siblings, but not so good to other people in society? So he says that the answer may lie not just in the universality and strength of family feeling, but also in the benefits to society as a whole that come from families taking care of themselves. What are these benefits? He says, when families see that children are fed, kept clean, and sheltered, so taking care of children, that the sick are nursed and the elderly cared for, they are being led by what Singer's calling bonds of natural affection, or it could be duty as well, if they don't like their family that much, to do what would otherwise fall upon the community itself, and either would not be done at all or would require labor unmotivated by natural impulses. So the family, because of the way kin altruism works, gets things done that need to be done for a functioning society and its members. Granted, there's going to be some people who are going to fall through the cracks, but they can be brought into other families as well. They can be adopted. They can be taken care of. And he says that in a large modern community, doing all these sorts of things would require an expensive and impersonal bureaucracy. So it may be more cost effective. And then he goes on and says, given the much greater intensity of family feeling compared with the degree of concern we have for the welfare of strangers, which is not very much, frankly, ethical rules which accept a degree of partiality towards the interests of one's family may be the best means of promoting the welfare of all families and thus of the entire community. So kin altruism can be harnessed to handle a lot of things that otherwise would fall upon society to take care of. So it would have a sort of pragmatic justification. That's what Peter Singer has to say about this powerful impulse of kin altruism in this essay. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.